We are now going to be speaking to Dr. Kevin Barrett, who is the editor of Veterans Today. He's coming to us live from Wisconsin in the U.S. And we're talking about some of the issues taking place with regards to America and other parts of the world and how it affects the rest of us, you know, in the rest of the global village, if you want to call it that. Dr. Barrett, assalamu alaikum and welcome to Radio Islam International.
Wa alaikum assalam. Rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Good to be with you again.
Well, good to have you. It's been a while since I've spoken to you, but I hope you're well. And shukran for making the time to be with us. So we've been seeing, you know, there's been a top general was so scared of Trump, you know, sparking war that he made secret calls to his Chinese counterpart. What's that all about? Do you want to maybe give us the background on this very interesting story?
Well, yes, this was reported in a new book by Bob Woodward, and apparently it was General Milley, Mark Milley, who was concerned that Trump and his friends might try to hang on to power by basically setting up a coup d'etat and possibly setting up a wag the dog scenario and creating a war. And that state of emergency would then allow him to postpone the elections, and then after the election happened, it might allow him to suspend or overturn results or to set up new elections. So that was the concern. You know, we've all, you know, seen that Wag the Dog movie about this kind of scenario where presidents start wars for political gain. And so the story, according to Woodward, is that Milley was genuinely concerned about this, and that he had heard that Chinese intelligence was telling China's leadership that there was a serious likelihood of a U.S. attack. So Milley called China to tell them that the U.S. military and intelligence people, the permanent government here, had everything under control. And apparently he had difficulties reassuring them of that, but ultimately there was no World War III, so I guess it worked. So that's the story that Woodward is telling, and it could certainly be true. Then again, it's only one side of the story, and who knows whether that was ever a real consideration. I don't think there's any evidence that Trump was out to start World War III with China. He was more interested in starting World War III with Iran, and he nearly did when he ordered the murder of General Soleimani. On the other hand, there is some evidence that Trump's people may have ordered the COVID-19 bio attack, which is most likely the way that COVID-19 appeared in this world, is through a U.S. biological warfare attack on Wuhan. So given all of this, I'm not really surprised by stories like this.
Wow. All right. Yeah, it does give us something to think about. You know, I don't think anybody has thought of Trump being the person involved with COVID-19. But now that you put it out there, I think it's going to get people thinking. But another story I think that's making the rounds as well is the one of the prosecution witnesses in the Netanyahu trial. Him and his wife died in a plane crash yesterday. Is this, you know, adding to the concern? Conspiracy theory? Do you have your conspiracy hat on this afternoon?
Well, one could say when something like this happens, when, you know, a witness who could put a gangster like Netanyahu in jail suddenly goes down in a plane crash not long before he's going to testify and put Netanyahu in jail, that you have to be a coincidence theorist. In fact, you have to be a crazy coincidence theorist to think it's a coincidence. And so, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer when things like this happen, and they happen all the time. You know, induced plane crashes are one of the most common ways that extremely powerful people assassinate those who are a problem to them. We've seen this over and over and over. John Perkins, in his book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, describes how two of his personal friends who were heads of Latin American countries, presidents, were murdered by people that Perkins actually knows. Because, you know, Perkins had been working with them with the World Bank to force those countries to take usurious loans, and these presidents had refused, and Perkins became skeptical about his role at the World Bank and was working with those presidents to try to do something more just. And then Perkins' friends, these presidents of these two Latin American countries, were murdered in plane crashes by people that are called the asteroids, that is, these high-level assassins who work for big intelligence agencies and for agencies like the World Bank, and sometimes they probably work for very wealthy or connected individuals as well. And we've seen all kinds of people go down in plane crashes in suspicious circumstances. Senator Paul Wellstone was taken out in a plane crash along with his wife, daughter, and campaign staff after he turned against Dick Cheney and wanted to expose 9/11 and stop the 9/11 wars.
Yes.
We've seen, I could go on all day talking about plane crash assassinations. So anyway, I don't think you need to put on a tinfoil conspiracy hat to recognize that this is almost certainly one of those assassinations.
Wow. You know, it really does get the mind boggled when you think about what is happening in our world right now, because these are things that we, growing up, we read in novels and didn't think that, you know, that they would actually become reality in the 21st century.
Well, I think gangster-like assassinations organized by powerful people have been part of reality for a very long time. I mean, you can call me a conspiracy theorist, but I still think that Caesar's murder was indeed the result of a conspiracy. going back to something you said earlier, by the way, I'm not blaming Trump personally for the bio attack on China. It was very likely a rogue operation that would have been conducted by neoconservatives working for people like Mike Pompeo and John Bolton. Trump himself would not necessarily have known about it.
All right. So we're also seeing Democrats spooning over George W. Bush. Are we in some sort of parallel universe? What exactly is going on with that?
Right. It's beyond a bizarre world. It's beyond a parallel universe. Now, George W. Bush, the arch war criminal whose administration was complicit in the demolition of the World Trade Center towers, murdering 3,000 Americans to create a public relations pretext for going to war. Bush is now the hero of the Democrats because he's turned against the Trump wing of the Republican Party. And I suppose it's good that the Republican Party is going down in a sort of civil war. And it's also good that there are still some anti-establishment people out there, even if they're severely misguided and following the likes of Donald Trump. But seeing these Democrats swoon over Bush just goes to show that the Democratic Party is now the party of the billionaire establishment elite. And they've joined forces with the Bush family, the Bush crime family, which is involved in a long list of serious political crimes in the United States, not least of all the Kennedy assassination, where Bush's father, H.W. Bush, was actually in Dallas that day and told us later he didn't remember where he had been on November 22nd, 1963. He phoned in a tip trying to confuse the FBI about a young Republican who had been supposedly threatening Kennedy. So George H.W. Bush was clearly a serious player in the Kennedy assassination, among many other things. And so that Bush crime family is utterly and completely evil. And the Democrats are not much better because they're in bed with the same corrupt forces.
All right, so we're looking at Afghanistan, and we've seen America, you know, sort of being defeated by Afghanistan. Divine justice, you think?
Yes, I think so. I think that there is a kind of payback. And, you know, we know that God's justice is perfect. And ultimately, whether in this world or the next, we get what we deserve. And some of it happens in this world, some of it in the next. And you're actually better off suffering in this world rather than the next. So maybe, in a sense, this is actually not such a terrible thing for the United States to be suffering humiliation in this world. I'm sure that Americans who are complicit in these war crimes will suffer in the next as well. But yeah, obviously, when you go to war on a false pretext, you make up a lie, like the false story about 9/11 that blamed bin Laden and al-Qaeda and indirectly blamed Afghanistan. That was all a lie that was designed to justify a war of aggression by a bully, an international bully that wanted to go out and try to grab resources, improve its geopolitical situation. And of course, that bully had been hijacked by another smaller bully, the Zionists in occupied Palestine, who were probably one of the main forces behind 9/11. Mm-hmm. But of course, it was the U.S. that primarily went into Afghanistan for a number of reasons: to try to take the center of the Grand Chessboard against Russia, China, and Iran, to put the opium business back in business after the Taliban had shut down the world's heroin trade, which was a threat to the big money launderers and international bankers who used that drug money to balance their books. And then finally, they were interested in trying to get a pipeline through Afghanistan because the Taliban had been giving the pipeline to a different company, an Argentinian company named Bridas, instead of Unocal. So those were the real reasons that the U.S. invaded Afghanistan. But they blew up the Twin Towers in this huge false flag, partly to trigger that war and other wars, but primarily, of course, to set the U.S. on a course of permanent conflict with the enemies of Israel, which is why the Zionists were the biggest force in 9/11. In any case, invading Afghanistan is not a good idea for any empire. It's called the graveyard of empires for good reason, and it looks like Afghanistan is becoming the graveyard of the American empire as well.
Mm-hmm. So post 9/11, how are things going in the U.S.? Were there any further Islamophobic incidents on September 11th this year, seeing that it was the 20th anniversary of what they call 9/11?
Well, the September 11th remembrances every year are, in a sense, themselves one big Islamophobic incident.
Mm-hmm.
The whole purpose of 9/11 was to create an intergenerational public myth, the kind that Philip Zelikow, the scriptwriter of both 9/11, most likely, and the 9/11 Commission report, is interested in. That's his specialty, is writing public myths to brainwash the public, and he's interested in the intergenerational myths that keep having their effect generation after generation, like Pearl Harbor, which kept Americans having an anti-Japanese feeling for generations. So 9/11 was supposed to incite intergenerational Islamophobia, primarily for the benefit of Israel. That's really what it was all about. And so, yes, it's one Islamophobic incident. Whether there were smaller cases where in this or that locality somebody said something or there was a hate crime, I'm not sure. I didn't really follow that closely this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's really interesting, though, is that intergenerational anti-Islam myth that was created on 9/11 is starting to wane, because that created a new fake enemy for Americans. But now we have more enemies and more sort of mythical narratives driving Americans to hate in many other directions. That pro-Trump people hate Trump, and or the pro-Trump people, I'm sorry, blame, you know, hate Biden and blame him for everything, and hate
yes.
Democrats. The anti-Trump people scapegoat Trump for everything. So there's all this red versus blue enmity in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also an attempt to blame China for COVID, which is precisely
yes.
you know, part of what the attack on China, this bio attack on Wuhan, when probably in October of 2019, U.S. military games participants included a couple of bio war special ops types who seeded the first cases of COVID in Wuhan with precisely the idea that China would be blamed for it. And also they did hope to damage China's economy, but unfortunately for them, the blowback actually damaged the West more than it damaged China. But so people are blaming and hating all sorts of folks now. So Muslims are actually moving down the list a little bit. And I suppose in a sense there's an element of divine justice and good news there. But we really need to expose the full truth about 9/11 in order to put an end to this evil, false public myth blaming Muslims for terrorism. We need to drive a stake through the heart of the official story of 9/11 and put an end to that intergenerational Islamophobia.
Absolutely, and I think that's going to take some doing, because 20 years for people to have been, still believing what they saw, even though there's so much of evidence that proves that it isn't exactly what it was, and yet people still believe. And I think one of the things that really, that gets me as a person sitting here in South Africa, watching what happens in the States, is the fact that I see a lot of veterans come back home from war in different parts of the Middle East, in particular. And most of them are not very, they're not living very normal, happy lives any longer. Many of them are on the streets because they don't have, the backing of the government. Many of them are suffering from different issues. I mean, they've been, either have PTSDs or they have been exposed to chemicals that have left them ill. And yet, the American population that tend to believe these so-called myths that we talk about, they don't see this, or are they just blinded to it?
Well, we have a sort of a national myth in the United States lionizing veterans, and especially, you know, those who fought in wars and suffered. So we all sort of give lip service to them, but in reality, American veterans are treated very badly.
Mm-hmm.
They have poor medical care. The VA system is corrupt and not very efficient. And as you say, so many veterans have their souls damaged by the things that happen in these wars. And one can understand why, because they arrive in places like Iraq and Afghanistan believing the public myth and believing they're there to do good and to fight for justice and so on. Or
yes.
Some of them are there for revenge and ready to kill for revenge. But ultimately, it doesn't take very long before almost all of them wake up and realize that the public version, the pretext for the war, was false, and that what's really going on in these wars is very, very different from what they had expected and what they had been told. And so they become cynical and jaded. And as they commit atrocious acts or witness atrocious acts, which are inevitable in this kind of warfare, because these are basically wars against entire populations. The U.S. invaded
yes.
Iraq and basically went to war against every person in Iraq, and likewise with Afghanistan. When you invade somebody else's country, you're going to war against the entire population that you're invading and occupying. And so it ends up being a counterinsurgency war, which involves warfare against the embedded resistance that, you know, hides within the population, is embedded mm-hmm. within the population. And so you go to war against the populations. And so they end up committing these horrible war crimes, kicking in doors, terrorizing people, raping, murdering innocent people. And those who don't actually participate in such things, almost all witness them. At the very least, even a cook or something like that will hear about them. And so their souls are damaged by this. They know that deep down inside they're doing something horrible and unjust. And many of them can't really live with that. You know, this is why in most wars, psychopaths, people who are clinical psychopaths who would,
yes.
would test at that level on the psychopathy test, end up doing almost all of the killing, or the vast majority of it. And they're perfectly happy. They come home. And their problem is not having people to kill and torture and rape anymore,
mm-hmm.
or having it much harder to get away with that, because that's what that's why they love war. But that's only maybe 1-2% of the male population. The other 98%, 99% is basically normal. And those people, seeing the horrors of war, you know, both committed by clinical psychopaths and then also by those other soldiers who've been temporarily brought into sociopathy by the circumstances, they're just horrified, and their souls are so badly damaged that when they come home, they can't live with themselves. And so we have veteran suicides. I forget if it's like every week or every month or something, we have more veteran suicides than were lost in either of these wars. And then we have people becoming drug addicted, homeless. They self-medicate with drugs, alcohol, things like that. And unfortunately, the population, which is living in la-la land, believing these myths, doesn't even really notice what's happening to the veterans. And so the whole thing is tragic, and it really comes from having a society that isn't based in godly morality. It's not based in any divine teaching anymore. It's wandered away from that, and so it's a bunch of people out for themselves, and we end up with a society controlled by psychopaths who are brainwashing the rest of the people. But at some point, people start to wake up and see the reality. And we get all of these conspiracy theories about blood-drinking reptiles and baby sacrificers and things running the world, which are actually not as inaccurate as they might sound. I mean, the people in charge really are evil.
Yeah.
And so people are waking up to that, and it's leading to social instability. So again, I think we are in the twilight of the American empire, and when the history is written, I think the defeat in Afghanistan may once again be seen as sort of the nail in the coffin of this empire. So Afghanistan chalks up another graveyard to its list of countries taken down in the graveyard of empires.
All right. Shukran so much for your time. Interesting talking to you on the subject, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.